Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 12th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Idea Gets Underway. Idea Travis Begins Its School Year by J.C. Lewis. Students at Idea Travis Academy attended their first day of class on Tuesday. Before entering the building, students' temperatures were taken at four stations around the school. Bethany Solis, executive director of Idea Public Schools in the Permian Basin, said during a visit on campus. Temperature check-ins took about 30 minutes for students Tuesday morning. Students then were taken to their classrooms. Teachers began by talking about the culture of IDEA and coronavirus procedures. Each student has a clear plastic partition on his or her desk along with a water bottle. In the hallways, students follow the direction of the paw prints and stand 6 feet apart on blue paws. Students will have lunches brought to their classroom and will eat at their desks. Solis said staff hadn't had problems with students wearing masks, and parents have helped with that. For recess, students will play in pods and get certain recess equipment different days and rotate the equipment throughout the week. At the end of the day, students will stay in the classroom until their parents arrive to pick them up. IDEA Public Schools partnered with Midland ISD to create IDEA Travis Academy, an in-district charter school. This article is entitled, Hospital Officials Encouraged by COVID Metrics, by Stuart Doreen. The reduced number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Midland County reported Friday and Monday was encouraging. That was the response from Midland Health CEO Russell Myers, who during his weekly coronavirus press conference also said clearly the positive indicators are not reason to be complacent. The Midland Health Department reported 22 cases on Friday, lowest number in more than a month. Then on Monday, the Health Department followed with 84, the lowest number for a Monday since at least mid-June. Clearly, the numbers are coming down, and even if they're a few days old, said Myers, commenting on Monday's test total tests taken about a week ago. I find that encouraging. Myers also pointed to decreases in the positivity rate, which peaked at about 30% a few weeks ago. Myers said 2 weeks ago that Midland Health conducted 524 tests and recorded a 23.5% positivity rate. Last week, there were 453 tests and a 15.6% rate. And the positivity rate on Monday was 4%. The positive metrics continue as the staff impacted by COVID-19 also trend lower. Myers said Tuesday that the number of hospital staff who are not at work because of a positive diagnosis or symptoms was 13. Nine are confirmed positive. Those numbers were up in the mid-50s only about 3 weeks ago, Myers said. One metric that trends in the opposite direction is the number of patients with coronavirus in the hospital. Myers said the COVID-19 census had been going down in recent weeks, but was 30, 6 in critical care, and 24 in the COVID units on Tuesday. Myers said the 6 patients in critical care range in their age from 30s to 80s. He said the others range from 18 to 93. The most of any age range is 7 patients in their 50s. Myers said Midland Health will continue to emphasize that people need to wear masks, socially distance, and continue to be careful in avoiding exposures. He said he is concerned about school beginning at campuses across Midland County because it creates large indoor gatherings of people who have not been routinely gathering. I would expect that we'll probably see a little growth in testing demand and in positive test numbers as we begin to gather again, both in schools and other settings, Myers said. That's going to come. It's really going to be important that people not forget to wear their masks, to wash their hands, to avoid touching their face, and to stay as much as possible out of closely confined rooms and poorly ventilated spaces. That will be crucial. This article is entitled Midland Memorial Reduces Hours for Drive-Thru Testing by Caitlin Randall. Midland Memorial Hospital reduced its hours for drive-thru coronavirus testing after demand for testing dropped, CEO Russell Myers said during a press briefing on Tuesday. The hospital conducts drive-thru testing at the Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus and the Coleman Family Clinic on Florida Avenue. Starting Wednesday, staff will be testing at the Coleman Family Clinic from 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. on weekdays and at the West Campus from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on weekdays. Meyer said the change was not because the hospital didn't have enough tests and added there is a substantial supply. Rather, the demand for testing has steadily declined in the last few weeks. The hospital tested only 56 people on Monday, he said. We don't want to waste our people's time, so we're limiting the availability at each of our sites, Myers said. But we thought it was important, and still do think it's important, to keep sites available on both sides of town so they're accessible to as much of the population as they possibly can be. In addition to a drop in a demand for testing, Myers said there had been a drop in the number of tests coming back positive, with only two of the 56 tests taken Monday resulting in positive cases. Last week, there was a positivity rate of 15% among those tested by Midland Memorial, and the week before that, 23% of tests were positive for the coronavirus, according to Myers. That's a significant decline from just a few weeks earlier when hospital officials reported their positivity rate to be at about 30%. Myers said the positivity rate reported by the hospital should not be misconstrued as a positivity rate representative of Midland County. He said hospital staff continue to test only those with symptoms or those who have had prolonged exposure to the virus, and only broad pool testing of asymptomatic individuals can accurately depict an area's positivity rate. Myers said he does not anticipate they will ever do broad community-wide testing because they don't have the resources to test tens of thousands of people at a time. The decline in positive tests is a hopeful sign that people are being more careful and fewer people are getting infected, Myers said. An appointment is required to be tested at the drive-through testing sites. Appointments can be made through the hospital's hotline by calling 68NURSE, 686-8773. This article is entitled Oxy to Have One Rig in Permian for Remainder of Year by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. Occidental Petroleum Corporation will have just a single oil rig in the Permian Basin in the second half of the year, illustrating the scale of the shale industry's pullback and the company's debt woes. The deal to buy Anadarko Petroleum Corporation last year was supposed to consolidate Occidental's position as the largest oil producer in the Permian, but instead did the opposite. In May last year, Occidental was running 12 rigs in the shale region of West Texas and New Mexico, while Anadarko had a further 10, meaning the current plans represented 95% decline in drilling. U.S. shale's explosive decade of growth and transformation of global energy markets came to an abrupt end when the COVID-19 pandemic struck this year, crushing demand for petroleum and busting open the fault lines of the debt-fueled boom. But a rebound in demand from the depths of the crisis in April is failing to translate into any real uptick in activity in the shale patch. Instead, production declines are expected to continue later this year. There are only 176 oil rigs active in the whole of the U.S., the lowest since 2005, well before the shale boom. Worse may be to come, with the number of drilling permits last month dropping to the lowest since September 2010, according to Rystad Energy. Activity is not likely to materially recover this year, the Oslo-based researcher said in a note Tuesday. Occidental, with its near $40 billion debt pile, is an extreme example of the retreat, but it's not alone. Supermajors ExxonMobil Corporation and Chevron Corporation, long expected to pick up the slack from a slowdown from smaller rivals, will probably only have 14 rigs between them by the end of this year, down from about 70 a year ago. U.S. oil production will likely end the year close to 10.1 million barrels a day, about 20% lower than at the start, according to IHS Market. Production will only increase by 350,000 barrels per day next year, according to the firm's analysts. For Occidental, the pullback is particularly humbling. The Anadarko deal was supposed to create a Permian giant to rival the Majors, with strong cash flows and enormous growth potential. But the pandemic, combined with the debt, means that Occidental is now shrinking, both in terms of production and market value. Occidental slashed its capital budget by more than $2.5 billion for the year. That's below $2.9 billion per year it needs to sustain production going forward. As such, output is declining quickly, with a 13% drop to 1.23 million barrels a day expected in the current quarter, and a further 5% in the fourth. The company said it plans to have only one rig in the Permian for the rest of the year and none in the Rocky Mountains. It will drill between 12 and 20 wells in the Permian in the second half, compared to 118 in the first half. The slowdown, combined with lower prices, caused Occidental to post a $6.6 billion write-down in the second quarter, equivalent to more than 40% of its market value. More than two-thirds of the impairment was to account for the lower value of its domestic onshore acreage, with the remainder in the Gulf of Mexico and overseas, the Houston-based company said Monday in a statement. The shares dropped 2.4% to $16.08 at 1:28 p.m. New York. Occidental is not alone in taking large impairments after the COVID-19 pandemic crushed demand for petroleum around the world, but its write-down is one of the biggest relative to its size. Though the changes don't affect near-term cash flows, they increase certain leverage ratios, potentially pushing up borrowing costs for the oil producer. Excluding the write-downs, Occidental made an adjusted loss of $1.76 a share, worse than the average $1.68 estimated by analysts in a Bloomberg survey. Production came in at the high end of Occidental's guidance at the equivalent of 1.41 million barrels of oil a day, boosted by output from the Permian despite the pullback. Almost every large oil and gas company has either taken or warned of massive write-downs after energy markets collapsed in the second quarter, eroding the value of their reserves. With uncertainty over or when or if petroleum demand will fully recover and savage spending cuts, the industry is effectively saying large portions of its oil in the ground may never be economically produced. This article is entitled Hospital CEO: Work with Educators Continues as Schools Begin Year by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday he expects the start of students returning to classes will lead to higher numbers of Midland County residents being tested and those testing positive for coronavirus. Myers, speaking during his weekly press conference, said his team at Midland Health has had good conversations with Midland ISD during the last several weeks. And while Midland ISD will start its school year with at-home instruction, there are other schools that would begin with an on-campus option. Hospital officials have been consistent during the pandemic that gatherings have led to higher coronavirus case counts. Schools starting this week in Midland County include Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Academy, Idea Travis Academy, Midland Christian School, and Greenwood ISD. All four entities will have started by Thursday. Midland ISD has an August 19th start date and will start the school year with 4 weeks of at-home learning for non-charter campuses. Myers said that hospital and MISD officials will continue to work on issues such as the interpretation of CDC guidelines, the appropriate use of personal protective equipment, and the availability and the interpretation of data. We appreciate the effort that they're making to try to keep students and staff in the schools safe as they contemplate reopening, Myers said. We're going to do everything we can to help in that process. Ector County ISD opens this week, and officials decided on a more phase-in model for re-entry. Meyer said he expects to reach out to medical officials in Odessa because of decisions made there. It probably would make some sense for us to be in dialogue with each of those districts to determine if there's medical advice that's proven to be useful to them, Meyer said. This article is entitled City, Cases from 5-Day Period Jumped to 112 by Stuart Doreen. The Midland Health Department reported late Tuesday afternoon that the number of coronavirus cases jumped Tuesday. The 112 confirmed cases were more than the total cases reported Friday and Monday combined, 106. The Health Department reported that the new cases are reflective of lab results from August 6th to 10th. They also raised the total number of cases during the pandemic to 2,788. Of those, 888 are isolated cases and 1,359 are recovered. Coronavirus report this week. Cases Monday, 84. Cases Tuesday, 112. Total cases, 2,788. This article is entitled, Ector County Reports Two Virus-Related Deaths. Active cases down by 29, by J.C. Lewis. Medical Center Health System reported Tuesday two coronavirus-related deaths. One patient, a 64-year-old man, died Monday night, according to a press release. He was from Ector County and was admitted to Medical Center Hospital on August 2nd. A 51-year-old woman from Ector County died Tuesday afternoon. She was admitted to Medical Center Hospital on July 28th and had pre-existing conditions. MCH forgot to report two deaths to the media, but did report the two deaths to the health department when they occurred, according to a press release. This increased the death count by two on Tuesday. Ector County reported that active cases were down by 29 to 726. The death total is 57, and 2,833 people have recovered.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, August 12, 2020. First Day Fundamentals. Gabriela Aguilar helped students in the Remote Learning Center at Sam Houston Collegiate Prep during the first day of class, August 5. To maintain social distancing, students rotate between being in front of the teacher in a classroom and watching online from the Remote Learning Center. MCPL to host virtual class on homeschooling. Midland County Public Libraries is to host Homeschool 101, a virtual class for homeschooling parents at 2 p.m. Thursday. The class will feature a former public school teacher, Janine Gein, who will discuss various types and methods of homeschooling and how each one can help families meet their goals, according to a press release from the library. Gein will provide an overview of several online resources and websites for homeschool teachers, as well as local homeschooling groups available to interested parents. The class is free and open to the public. To sign up, go to tinyurl.com/zoomhs or visit the library's website, www.co.midland.tx.us/lib, and click on Homeschool 101 on the homepage slideshow. The class will be hosted via Zoom and recorded for parents who are not available during the scheduled time. CIS needs masks for at-risk kids. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit mssconnections.org. Communities and schools of the Permian Basin needs masks for at-risk students. Masks may be homemade or purchased from Amazon Smile wish list. Also, monetary donations may be made at the CIS website. For more information, call 205-1364 or email info@cispb.org. Amazon Smile wish list is at https://lnkd.in/evtdsp. Rays of Hope Children's Grief Center has volunteer training set for 10 a.m. Saturday at the center. To RSVP, call 684-5437 or email kworkman@raysofhopemidland.org. Be the Change needs volunteers for fundraising and programs. Anyone interested in being the positive change in a teen's life can contact Donnie at 685-0449 or Don Juan at btcpb.org. Midland Health plans blood drive. Midland Health is partnering with Vitalant for blood drive, set for 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. August 19 at the lobby of Abel Hanger Medical Pavilion on Andrews Highway. To register, go to bloodhero.com. Walk-ins will be taken, according to a press release from Midland Health. Odessa Synergy launches drive-in movie option. Synergy Theater on State Highway 191 in Odessa will be offering a drive-in option beginning Friday, according to its website. Christmas Vacation and The Goonies will be showing until August 20. Tickets are $15.99 per car on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and $20.99 per car on Friday and Saturday. According to the website, patrons must park in outlined parking spots and may sit outside vehicles in lawn chairs. Outside food and beverages are not permitted. There are a limited number of portable radios available for those who want to sit outside their vehicles. Vehicle lights must be turned off. To purchase tickets, go to synergy.com/synergy-drive-in-Odessa. TTU names new masked rider. Texas Tech University has named Cameron Heckert of Highlands Ranch, Colorado, as its 59th masked rider. Heckert is a senior sport management major and will serve as the masked rider for the 2020-2021 academic school year, according to a press release from the university. She succeeds Emily Broadbeck, a graduate student from Lubbock majoring in wildlife, aquatic, and wildlands science and management. Today in history. Today's Wednesday, August 12, the 225th day of 2020. There are 141 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On August 12, 2017, a car plowed into a crowd of people peacefully protesting a white nationalist rally in the Virginia college town of Charlottesville, killing 32-year-old Heather Hayer and hurting more than a dozen others. The attacker, James Alex Fields, was sentenced to life in prison on 29 federal hate crime charges and life plus 419 years.
This is the opinion page. This column is called Guest View and is entitled COVID-19 Infections in Classrooms Shouldn't Be a State Secret from the Dallas Morning News. The Texas Education Agency and the Texas Department of State Health Services are discussing whether data will be kept on COVID-19 infections in schools and provided to the public. The answer should be an emphatic yes on both counts. The last thing schools need is too little information about the spread of the coronavirus in classrooms. Collecting infection information and making it publicly available would provide crucial insight into how safely school districts are managing the return to in-person instruction on campuses. One doesn't have to look far for examples of how the lack of meaningful data complicated the battle to control the virus. Aside from the national snafus over testing, regulatory gaps, and reporting failures, allowed the virus to gain a deadly toehold in assisted living centers around the country. This is not a mistake that we should repeat with our children. The science on children and coronavirus infections has evolved from early assertions that children were at low risk of contracting and transmitting the virus. Several recent studies now indicate that children with the virus could pose significant risks to those around them. In the last 2 weeks of July, nearly 100,000 children in the United States tested positive for the coronavirus, according to a report published by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association. During that two-week period, the infection rate among children increased 40% in the state and cities studied. Unfortunately, not all states and Texas, for example, reported age distribution for only 8% of all cases, prompting researchers to exclude our state from parts of their analysis. Still, from other studies, the nation has learned that older children can transmit the virus just as much as adults, that children younger than 5 carry a higher viral load than adults, and that Black and Hispanic children face higher rates of infections, hospitalizations, and coronavirus-related complications than white children. Transparency of school infection information is absolutely necessary. Schools and children can't wait for a vaccine to reduce the risk closer to zero. However, having granular data publicly available allows parents, schools, and teachers to make measured and informed decisions about the safety of classrooms. And it ensures that medical science will have a fighting chance against the political desire of some to underplay the challenges. No completely flawless strategy exists for opening and keeping schools open during the pandemic. And the challenges that this pandemic poses to schools often seem insurmountable. However, the challenges are manageable, but only if we rely on accurate, transparent data to guide us toward the best choices. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This is the obituary column for Wednesday, August 12th, 2020. Deborah Duncan. Deborah Duncan, 64, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, August 9th, survived by her family. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 12th at Rest Haven Memorial Cemetery. Debbie was born on December 29th, 1955 in Kermit, Texas, to Joe and Iva Wills. Debbie is survived by her husband, Shane Duncan, her son and daughter-in-law, Michael and Kristen Beggs, her beautiful grandchildren, Kimber and Barrett Beggs, her brother, Larry Wills, her brother-in-law, Harold Gregory, and wife, Linda, her brother-in-law, Joe Duncan, and wife, Rebecca, her sister-in-law, Charlene Fralin, her niece, Tracy Dow, and husband, Scott, her nephew, Joe Don Gregory, and wife, Susan, her great-nieces, Tiffany Christie, and husband, Brandon, and Nicole Thomas, and husband Coley, as well as seven great nieces and nephews. Debbie is preceded in death by her parents, Joe and Iva Wills, and her sister, Mary Gregory. The family would like to express their gratitude towards Hospice of Midland. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jim Fowler. Jim Fowler, 83, of Odessa, passed away Friday, August 7, 2020. He was born September 29, 1936, in Birmingham, Alabama, the oldest of 11 children. He is preceded in death by one son, Jimmy. Survivors include his wife of 45 years, Ann Fowler, two daughters, Kathy Hinsley and Vicki Elkins, one son, Ricky Fowler, three grandsons, Gary, Clint, and Jeffrey, two granddaughters, Heather and Casey, and five great-grandchildren. He is also survived by one brother, Sam Smith, and five sisters, Virginia Hammett, Juanita Taylor, Naomi Winfrey, Dorothy McGee, and Viola Kennedy. He also leaves behind many friends that he made over the course of a life very well lived. There will be no visitation, and a private burial will follow at a later date. Memorial donations may be made to the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation, 2361 Highland Boulevard, Staten Island, New York, 10306-3100, or the DAV, P.O. Box 14301, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45250-0301. Death notices. Emilio Navarra Tovar. Emilio Navarra Tovar, Chichi, age 85, passed away on August 6, 2020 in Midland, Texas. Viewing will be Wednesday, August 12, 2020 from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a rosary being held at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Thursday, August 13th at 9 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his wife, Antonia Tovar, his five children, Evangelina Tovar, Raymond Tovar, Jesus Manuel Tovar, Alessio Tovar, Rogelio Tovar, 13 grandchildren, and one sister. Shirley Jeffcoat. Shirley Jeffcoat, 77, at Midland, passed away Saturday, August 8, 2020, at Midland Memorial Hospital. She was born February 13, 1943, in Clarksville, Texas, to Martha Stevens and Arthur Adams. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, August 12th, at 10 a.m. at Fairview Cemetery with a burial to follow. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, August 12th. Commissioners plow through budget. Adoption set for September 22nd for 2020-2021 spending plan. The story was written by Bob Campbell. Hector County Commissioners Monday granted Sheriff Mike Griffiths his request for 27 new Chevrolet Tahoes, which Griffiths said will greatly enhance his office's ability to protect the public. The sheriff said all 40 of his patrol deputies will now be able to take their vehicles home, increasing the law enforcement presence around the county and enabling the officers to respond to emergencies immediately. He said only sergeants and lieutenants have been taking them home. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons projected the van's cost at $57,000 each. Quote, "To me, the officers getting these patrol vehicles to take home is a milestone," said Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers. Quote, "We're fortunate to live in a law enforcement-loving community," Griffiths said, adding that his detention center population of 910 Monday will decline when the Texas Department of Criminal Justice begins accepting prisoners again. The jail's capacity is 1,079. The court's newly authorized expenditures for the sheriff's office and jail are $12,200,000 and $17,275,000, respectively. Chief Deputy Eddie Mancha says the sheriff's office pays new jailers $23.23 and new deputies $24.76 per hour. Griffiths said his office has 40 vacancies that it can live with for the time being, and the commissioners cut 20 of those positions, saying the sheriff can fill the other 20 if he turns out to need them. Griffiths said the outsourcing of inmates to other counties has been all but ended, with only 6 inmates being housed in Garza County at Post. The court's action came during day-long hearings to develop the county's 2020-2021 budget, preceded Monday afternoon by its approval of road projects, including the expenditures from sales tax revenues of $1 million to rebuild 67th Street and $4 million to reconstruct West 42nd Street from FM 1936 to Moss Avenue. Other projects okayed during Highways and Street Department Director Evan Kessie's presentation were the $3 million resurfacing of Cottonwood Road from the Andrews Highway to the Midland County line and the $1.2 million revamping of Redondo Avenue. Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton said $21 million in road projects will be undertaken in the next 2 years, substantially reducing travel and education allotments in every department. The commissioners were working on Judge Debbie Hayes' proposed general fund budget of $67 million, which is an increase from the current year's $66.5 million plan. They will adopt the new budget and set the property tax rate on September 22nd. The current tax rate is 36.5 cents per $100 in valuation, and commissioners have indicated that it will not be raised. County Clerk Jennifer Martin and District Clerk Clarissa Webster sought raises for their staffs, but Hayes and the commissioner said they were unwilling to consider them. Seeking a 10% across-the-board hike, Martin said, quote, "I have to ask because I appreciate my people more than they will ever know," end quote. Martin reported that her probate and civil case filings, quote, "are down a little," unquote, but will probably rebound. She said her staff members have all been back at work since early May after working at home for a number of weeks to avoid the pandemic, adding that most of them earn less than $13 an hour. Martin said no one in her office had tested positive for COVID-19. Webster said a backlog of criminal cases has increased with a slowdown in court actions, and she reported not having filled a full-time vacancy and a part-time vacancy. noting that the issuance of passports has been halted since spring, Webster said, quote, "We get calls for passports every day. People can't wait for them to open back up," end quote. She argued against cutting the full-time and part-time jobs, saying her clerks were already earning substantial compensatory time. Quote, "That would be detrimental to the other departments," Webster said. However, a motion by Simmons to eliminate those jobs was unanimously approved. 2020-2021 expenditures for the county clerk and district clerk are now projected at $1.3 million and $1.6 million, respectively, for decreases from $1.4 million and $1.7 million for the fiscal year ending September 30th. In a stringent cost-cutting humor, with revenues expected to decrease next year, the court also showed no empathy for a raise request by Precinct 2 Justice of the Peace Missy Walden, who says she makes $5,500 less annually than JPs Terry Lang in Precinct 1, Sherwood Cupper in Precinct 3, and Eddie Spivey in Precinct 4. Simmons said the current system could not be changed without eliminating the step raises the JPs earn. Lang handed out a news release at Tuesday's regular morning meeting, saying the court's decision not to give him a raise, quote, was arbitrary and non-rational and was done without reason or judgment because his workload is much greater than the other judges. Lang, Cupper, and Spivey each earn $72,000 to Walden's $66,000. Building Maintenance Director Charles Pierce was denied small raises for two grounds workers Tuesday afternoon, to which he responded, "I had to ask. They mow all day in 100-degree temperatures," said Pierce, whose department has allocated $4.5 million this year. Quote, "I made $50,000 in cuts in my budget to try and help the court as much as I can," end quote. He said his employees have put in 7,000 hours for maintenance and repairs on the 1938 vintage courthouse this year, adding, quote, "The courthouse is our biggest headache of all the buildings in the county," end quote. NTO student starts snow cone business. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. A George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa student has opened a snow cone shop called Dino Sweets that combines skills he's learned in school and his love of dinosaurs. 17-year-old Emmanuel Garcia opened the shop at 3720 North Moss Avenue about a month ago. Quote, "I wanted to open up the shop because of everything going on with the pandemic," the incoming senior said. "A lot of my friends and I were put out of jobs, and a lot was taken away from us because we are seen as kids, and you know how that is. I've had experience with snow cones before, so I thought, why not open a shop, and I love dinosaurs, so I wanted to make that a theme," Garcia said. He currently has 8 employees, many of whom are his friends. The shop is located in a spot near the Garcia residence and is surrounded by rigs. Quote, "Right now, I think it's doing pretty good for itself, especially just starting out. Every week or every other week, we've had the news come out here to promote us because we're always having promotions going on and we're always trying to do things for the community," Garcia said. A blood drive is planned for 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. September 18th. Testing for COVID-19 antibodies will also be conducted by Vitalant, Emmanuel's mom Angie said. Those interested may call 432-296-8755 to sign up. Quote, "Every person that is tested for antibodies or donates, they will be given a free shake or smoothie," Emmanuel said. Emmanuel said his mom has been helpful to him with the snow cone shop. Attending New Tech also has helped from the leadership and time management point of view. Quote, "At New Tech, they do give you a little bit more freedom and a lot more responsibility, and I do feel like that's helped me with my management and to just keep track of things altogether," Garcia said. Angie Garcia added that NTO prepares students to come up with ideas like starting their own businesses and helps them think outside the box. Geraldine Salas, NTO English and French facilitator, had Emmanuel as a student. Quote, "I'm so proud of Emmanuel. He is so smart and has great charisma. I'm not at all surprised he is a young entrepreneur. He would also make the best of project ideas in the classrooms, either changing or building upon them. He always surrounded himself with his friends and was great at collaborating with everyone. He stays active and likes to help any time he can by joining different school clubs. I'm so excited for his future. I know it will be a bright one. I wish him and his classmates nothing but success with their new business." End quote. NTO principal Gerardo Ramirez added that they were thrilled to hear about Emmanuel's business venture. Quote, "We know he was excited for this challenge. I know the encouragement from his family, along with his learning experience from NTO, has prepared him with skill set to problem solve, collaborate, and use his social and technology skills to help others. We know he will be successful at whatever he decides to pursue now or in the future. We are so proud of him. I always say our learners are leaders. They have the potential and ability to do great things for themselves and those around them," Ramirez said in an email. Emmanuel said he chose the flavors for the shop by looking up the 50 most popular ones. Quote, "It takes a lot to start up, but I think that in the end money does come back to you. You've got to spend money to make money," Emmanuel said. He added that he plans to keep the shop going into October selling snow cones. Quote, "We're looking into staying open during the winter and coming up with some new ideas. We don't know them yet," Emmanuel said. Emmanuel has two older brothers and one older sister. Quote, "I'm excited for him because it's not an opportunity that everybody gets, but it's an opportunity for him even just talking to each other and seeing other people, because right now with the quarantine, they get very few social interactions with anybody, so I think it also takes them out of that little cocoon that they were in," she added. Emmanuel said he's not sure he will pursue entrepreneurship for his lifetime, but for right now, it's a good place to be. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 3,616. Ector County negative, 16,689 out of 20,541 tested, with 236 pending, 57 deaths. Recovered, 2,833. Active cases, 726. Midland County, 2,676 confirmed cases with 49 deaths. Texas, 500,620 confirmed cases with 4,088,863 tested. Total Texas deaths, 8,710. U.S. cases, 5,064,171 total confirmed cases and 162,407 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. After school care. This fall, Campfire will be offering a state-licensed, affordable quality school care for students on 10 Odessa campuses: Austin, Burnett, Gonzales, Noel, Pease, Bice, Cameron, Ross, Burleson, and Jordan Elementary Schools. Children must attend the school offering the Kids Care program to be eligible. Registration started July 13th and will continue until all spots are filled. The after-school programs are operated by Campfire West Texas, and components of the program include homework help, games, arts and crafts, outdoor recreation, and traditional campfire activities and projects. The program will be offered from the time school is out through 6 p.m. Enrollment will be limited, with a child-to-adult ratio of no more than 15-1, to provide attention and quality supervision. To register for Kids Care, complete an online registration and pay a $20 annual fee for each child enrolled. A weekly $50 fee will be charged per child, and financial assistance is available for those who qualify. Online registration forms are only available at www.campfirewtx.org. For more information, call Campfire West Texas at 570-4144. Bust-in for badges is scheduled for September 10th and 11th at Windwalker Farms in Stanton. This event benefits local law enforcement, Odessa Police Department, Midland Police Department, Hector County Sheriff's Office, and Midland County Sheriff's Office, and helps pay for much-needed equipment and supplies. Raffle tickets are currently available for a Polaris Ranger 570, which is a $10,500 value, a Springfield M1A rifle, an $1,800 value, and a Diamond VIP package for a George Strait concert, a $3,400 value, which has been postponed until further advised. The raffle tickets can be purchased by coming to the Odessa Police Department front desk during regular business hours or by calling 335-3322. Raffle tickets are $20 each, or 6 tickets for $100. To register for Bustin' for Badges or for more information, call 571-3462 or visit bustinforbadges.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, August 12th, 2020. Pandemic Education. Odessa College invites the community to join the community's education leaders as they discuss educating our community during the pandemic on Coffee and Community Conversation live stream on Facebook. The one-hour program begins at 9 a.m. Thursday. Guest panelists this week will be ECISD Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray, OC President Gregory D. Williams, and University of Texas Permian Basin President Sandra Woolley. KOSA-TV News anchor Jay Hendricks will serve as moderator for the discussion. Coffee and Community Conversation is a weekly panel discussion on topics of current interest and impact. Viewers can watch the Coffee and Community Conversation live stream and submit questions to the panel via the comments field during the event by logging on to facebook.com/Odessa College. Man charged with sexually assaulting girl multiple times. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed that a 33-year-old man sexually abused a 13-year-old girl multiple times during the span of 2 years. Jose Angel Silva was charged August 5th with continuous sexual abuse of a child, family violence, a first-degree felony. The reported sexual abuse happened between July 23rd and July 25th, the affidavit stated. During a Harmony Home interview, the girl reportedly detailed she was sexually assaulted by Silva while she was lying on the bed to go to sleep. The girl stated the first sexual assault happened when she was 11 years old. She also stated that she was sexually assaulted every other weekend. A SANE sexual assault nurse examiner exam was conducted on August 4th at Medical Center Hospital, the affidavit stated. The exam supported the claim of sexual assault. Silva was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 6:59 a.m. August 6th. Jail records show he has one bond totaling $75,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday morning. Teenager dies in rollover in West Odessa. An Odessa teenager died in a single vehicle rollover in West Odessa. Matthew Palomares, 19, of Odessa, was driving a 2006 Toyota Corolla east on Mockingbird Lane, a Texas DPS press release stated. A passenger in the Corolla was identified as 19-year-old Judith Sigala of Odessa. The Corolla reportedly left the roadway, overcorrected, and rolled. Palomares and Sigala were both transported to Medical Center Hospital. Palomares was pronounced dead by medical staff, while Sigala had non-incapacitating injuries. They were not wearing seatbelts, the press release stated. Obituary and death notice for Wednesday, August 12th. James Fowler. Jim Fowler, 83, of Odessa, passed away Friday, August 7th. He was born September 29th, 1936, in Birmingham, Alabama, the oldest of 11 children. He is preceded in death by one son, Jimmy. Survivors include his wife of 45 years, Ann Fowler, two daughters, Kathy Hensley and Vicki Elkins, one son, Ricky Fowler, three grandsons, two granddaughters, and five great-grandchildren. He is also survived by his brother, Sam Smith, and five sisters, Virginia Hammett, Juanita Taylor, Naomi Winfrey, Dorothy McGee, and Viola Kennedy. There will be no visitation, and a private burial will follow at a later date. Memorial donations may be made to the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation, 2361 Highland Boulevard, Staten Island, New York, 10306, or the DAV, Post Office Box 14301, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45250. Death notice. Nazario Armendariz. Nazario Armendariz, 74, of Odessa, died Saturday, August 8th. Mass will be celebrated at 12 noon, Monday, August 17th, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
This article is entitled "Face Masks Create Challenges for Deaf, Hard of Hearing" by John Oliva, Corpus Christi Caller Times. This article is entitled "Face Masks Create Challenges for Deaf, Hard of Hearing" by John Oliva, Corpus Christi Caller Times. Corpus Christi, face masks are one of the many things being considered the new normal during the COVID-19 pandemic. However, they present problems for one group of people, the deaf and hard of hearing. Natasha Raisinen, 21, became hard of hearing 7 years ago after she got sick the summer before her freshman year of high school. She knows basic American Sign Language, but also reads lips to understand what others say to her. She said she recently had to quit her job at a fast food restaurant because of face masks. "Without being able to read lips, my method of communication has become almost impossible," Raisinen said. "Oftentimes when I go to the store or through the drive-thru, I have to bring someone with me just to understand what people are saying. If I go alone, it isn't rare for employees to get upset with me for not understanding them." People who are deaf or hard of hearing rely on visual aids, such as body language. Using clear facial expressions and gestures when communicating with a person who is deaf or hard of hearing will help them understand what people are saying. Tony Padilla is one of the few ASL interpreters who sign during the city's daily COVID-19 briefings. Padilla wears a face mask until she goes on the air to interpret and puts it back on immediately afterwards. Sign language interpreter Tony Padilla left interprets for Nueces County Judge Barbara Canales during a news conference July 1st, 2020 on the COVID-19 pandemic. The only reason I take it off is because of a large portion of sign language is dependent upon the facial expressions, Padilla said. That's where a lot of the grammar comes from, our expressions. That's necessary for the full communication in sign language. Lisa Thomas, the executive director of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Center in Corpus Christi, estimates of 23,000 people in Nueces County are deaf or hard of hearing. Raisinen can be counted among them. Her doctor believes her progressive hearing loss is an autoimmune dysfunction, with her immune system became attacking her ears instead of the virus she had at the time. Raisinen is currently waiting to take ASL classes at Del Mar College, since Texas A&M University Corpus Christi does not offer any programs. Facial gestures and body language are incredibly important to her. It's like context clues from a book. A lot of them don't make sense without them, Raisinen said. Thomas said the corporation's code of ethics dictates an interpreter doesn't have to accept an assignment if they're uncomfortable with the situation. Masks serve as a barrier to COVID-19, but it is also an additional barrier to effective communication, Thomas said. The linguistic conventions of facial expressions and mouth movements used in American Sign Language are limited or restricted by the use of a mask. American Sign Language interpreter Tony Padilla translates for Corpus Christi manager Peter Zanoni as he speaks during a daily Public Health District COVID-19 update at City Hall. When it comes to alternative face coverings, such as face shields, Thomas and Padilla agree they are not the best. Face shields can create reflections, shadows, and other things that are not really acceptable on a televised assignment, Thomas said. If you sign, you know your hands will come up and hit the face shields. You'll knock it off. This column is distributed by Associated Press.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.